CBS, I Am the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I turn to a picture that went round the world very quickly of what is said to be China building second field of missile silos in its western deserts. What's important about this picture is not the analysis of what we're looking at. It's the fact itself. The photographs come from a commercial satellite company called Planet Labs. And if I understand correctly, the photographs were for a customer, the Federation of American Scientists. There's much more to this story, but the fact of it itself is the presenting issue now at hand. What is to be done that private enterprise and intellectual investigation now comes to the attention of the national security apparatus of planet Earth? Is this a good thing? Is the U.S. government prepared to deal with all of these emerging opportunities? At the same time, who's in charge? I welcome Steve Blank, Professor Steve Blank, an adjunct professor at Stanford University, an ex-member of the Defense Business Board, co-author of Hacking for Defense, NSF I-Corps, and co-creator of Lean Startup Methodology, along with his colleague, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for South and Southeast Asia, Joe Felter, an Army veteran, Army Special Forces, writing with their colleague Raj Shah at War on the Rocks about what is to be done. Gentlemen, I presented a real-life moving story complication. What is to be done? I imagine, once upon a time, President Kennedy was standing there next to Secretary of Defense McNamara, and they were looking at images of Cuba, a flyover of our surveillance showing Soviet missiles threatening the U.S. That was top secret, still so top secret I even hesitate to talk about it, but there it is. Now, Steve, I begin with you. Are we ready for the fact that commercial is the quality that we could only have dreamed about in the 1960s for Jack Kennedy? Good evening to you, Steve.
So John, it's actually better resolution than when John Kennedy saw. And think about it. You've got startups in San Francisco taking a look at any place on Earth. And it's just indicative of what's happened to the Department of Defense in the last 10 or 20 years, is the commercial technology is now capable of doing things that only the DoD had access to in the 20th century, whether it's commercial access to space or exquisite systems in space or AI, machine learning, or robotics, quantum computing. All these things are necessary for the DoD to keep it safe and secure, but they're no longer owned by the DoD. For the first time ever, these technologies are owned by commercial companies, both in the United States, but more importantly in China.
Joe, I come to you because you've recently served in government, so I ask you to unpack this. I learned that it is possible we're looking at areas of interest to the U.S. government that combine the National Security Council, the Commerce Department, the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Council of Economic Advisors, the Treasury Department, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, and the Office of Management and Budget. That is a room full of very official people. Are they prepared to deal with this complex matter that commercial is providing critical intelligence that also has commercial value? Is the government ready for this, Joe?
You know, John, I think the good news is I think they're aware of it, but the disturbing news is that they're not quite ready for it just based on the bureaucratic frictions. The way we've always done business is not the way we need to do business now. So we're still trying to, recover from the legacy approaches we've done before. You mentioned just tell a little anecdote to reinforce the dynamic you're describing with Kennedy. I remember my first combat action jumping into Panama way back in 1989. I had to secure overhead imagery to me and tie it down because it was top secret. And I remember jumping out of the plane and the wind ripped it out of my pocket. And I was more concerned about losing that top secret imagery and going to jail than the green tracers ripping through my parachute. Fast forward, a number of years later in Iraq, Al-Qaeda was targeting our bases using Google Earth, using overhead imagery, which is better than what I had that was top secret, just as Stephen mentioned. So this is a new paradigm. But back to your original question, we're aware of the problem. We're trying to work on addressing it. We made some progress, but we have a long way to go. And our adversaries, are out ahead of us, and we need to close that gap rapidly.
Steve, I come to the concerns that not only of a matter of who's in government and who's in charge, but we have some choke points now that are pretty obviously dangerous. One of the choke points you identify in your article is about computer chips. We know that. That's shortage, and we're all depending on Taiwan, presuming it's still with us. However, drones, Steve, I didn't know that we'd offloaded our responsibility for drones to China. Did that just happen?
Now, about 85% of the commercial drones are made in China, most of them by a company called DJI, at least the small ones. And in fact, when the drone market emerged, the U.S. government had had the opportunity to invest in it. And of course, we lacked and still lack a national industrial policy, China did and managed to basically own the marketplace. The relevant part for the military, though, is not only these hobbyist drones, but in fact, those applied in war. And, the Armenians and Azerbaijanis just fought probably the first drone war, didn't get much attention in the popular press, but basically using Turkish drones and Israelis electronic warfare, they basically destroyed an entire ground force for the first time with drones. An impressive example of 21st century warfare on YouTube. And if I was in the army in a tanker or responsible for artillery, that would make me wet my pants watching those videos, because we really don't have an effective counter drone facility now, and B, offensively, I don't think we could prosecute that type of war that a second rate nation did. So the world's changing rapidly underneath our feet.
I want to stay with you, Steve, because SolarWinds cyber attacks, well known to us, Treasury, State, Defense, everything was penetrated, along with customers that were commercial as well. Was anybody in charge of taking blame for that, to your knowledge, Steve? Did we have one person we could say, you're fired?
Yeah, I think it's mostly if we want to take blame, we should blame the American public. While we have done a pretty good job in hardening our military systems, lobbyists have managed to prevent the Congress from mandating hardening our commercial systems like banking or finance or social media. Why? Because it's expensive and time consuming and would slow things down. And as long as we kind of separate our government systems, command and control, and the rest from banking and finance and utilities, and not mandate that, then we're going to constantly see these problems. Other countries don't have that problem. They just say, you will, and things happen. That's not how a democracy works. And it turns out that the deeper the pockets you have, the bigger the problems you're going to have.
Joe, I come to you again because you're guilty of being government at one point in your life. All right. When the agencies in charge of these aspects of the U.S. government learn about these hacks or these penetrations or these complications, do they respond by hardening their software? Do they respond in any fashion at all? Or do people shrug and say, I'm glad it didn't happen to me, and knowing it'll happen again?
Yeah, again, John, I think there's a recognition that they need to do something, but we're just not set up, I think, bureaucratically, organizationally, to take the responses that are required. We need to be a lot more nimble, a lot more responsive. So, but yeah, I think to some degree, until it hits, you, it is a bit of a, God, I'm glad it didn't happen to me, but we the writing's on the wall that everyone's going to get a hit, and we need to be proactive in our response to that. And there needs to be an organ. I think this is what Steve and I and Raj try to recommend in our earlier report, is need to have some organization. I mean, maybe it's the NSC, maybe it's elsewhere, but we need to have a coherent, coordinated, and proactive response to protect ourselves.
I tell the anecdote, and I believe it's not true, but I tell it anyway, urban legend, that one of the ways the Kremlin was dealing with early days of hacking was going back to the IBM Selectric and carbon copies of critical information, so they were completely off the grid. Joe, is that imaginable? Do we go that direction given the penetration of our apparatus?
John, just say one more time. I want to make sure I got that question right.
They went to the legend is that the Kremlin has gone to typewriters and carbon copies, no longer online anywhere.
Yeah, I mean they're going to take measures to defend and make it hard for us to penetrate them for sure. And we're going to have to, you know, figure out some response that are also recognizing these challenges.
We go to paper, Joe? That would secure us.
Yeah, I don't think we can do that, but there's got to be this is where we have to identify, you know, the right response and leverage our technology in ways that we can defend ourselves and mitigate the risk that we were exposing so vulnerable.
So we're lucky, Joe, that some of our systems are so old they still use eight inch floppies and probably are not connected to the internet
I remember doing a story, Steve, where the federal government was searching for programmers who were in their 70s because they had knowledge of the apparatus that was used in the 1960s that the U.S. government is still using.
Fortunately or unfortunately, some of that might be our nuclear command and control systems. Yes. That I've seen pictures of just an open source of people inserting floppy drives to program the system, but that's the good news and bad news about being in a digital world and reaping the benefits and also downsides of being connected.
We're going to come to what is to be done, but I'm having so much fun identifying the problem. One more. Joe, SpaceX.
Yes.
I follow very carefully space engineering, the wonderful development of commercial space. I recall an afternoon where SpaceX had to delay one of its tests. It was testing early on. It's been successful now, but there would be these spectacular crashes. But it wasn't about a crash. It was because the inspector from Washington, the FAA inspector, hadn't caught the right flight to get to Boca Chica. So they delayed the launch for several days, is my memory. Joe, please help me. SpaceX having to be regulated to the point of not performing. Is there anybody in government who can pick up that phone and say, FAA, get a life?
Well, John, let's hope so. This is a great example. I mean, we got to move a lot faster than that. And this is just a great example of how these delays will, you know, impede, you know, innovation. Steve's, you know, literally wrote the book on this, but you know, it's not necessarily fail fast. You learn fast and you learn and you iterate. So SpaceX, they're going to crash. They're going to make, you know, things are going to fail, but we need to keep doing it, learn, iterate and develop, you know, this, what we call maybe an updated minimum viable product, if you will, for SpaceX. So, but great example of the challenges. We just can't move at the speed of government bureaucracy. Innovation is way ahead of that, and SpaceX can't be constrained by that. And thankfully, they haven't been. They've made some. It's a great example of how an innovative, fast moving company can make advances in spite of some of the government frictions that they've tried to pull it back.
Now we come to what is to be done. I'm speaking with Steve Blank, adjunct professor at Stanford University, and Joe Felt at the Hoover Institution. When we come back, the solution ? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.